This is Philosophy Weekly. I'm Doc Searls. This week, we have bonus co-hosts Catherine Druckman and Sean Powers. Help me talk to Pietro DiCaprio, who does Vanilla OS. It's only 3 months old. It's a brand new operating system. It is immutable. It's a new thing. It truly matters. There's a lot of discussion around it, and that is coming up next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly, episode 725, recorded Wednesday, March 29th, 2023. Vanilla OS on a stick. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Collide. That's Collide with a K. Collide is a device trust solution that ensures that if a device isn't secure, it can't access your apps. It's zero trust for Okta. Visit collide.com/floss and book a demo today. Hello again, everybody, everywhere on Earth. I am Doc Searls, and this is Floss Weekly. Joined this week by Catherine Druckman herself. There she is.
Hello.
And we have Sean Powers coming in, too, at some point. So he disappeared. There he is. Then Sean Powers. There's Sean Powers. With his green hair and his green things. So both of you guys are eager to have this show. And Catherine, you met our guest Pietro at Scale.
Yeah, just
and walking around with an image of Sean as well.
It's
somehow.
True. Yeah, it's a great icebreaker. A reason around Sean's head.
I have somebody's head here. It's not Hamlet. What were you doing? What was that exactly? What was the purpose?
What was the purpose of carrying Sean's head? I'm not really sure how to answer that. I don't think there was a purpose. It was just fun. You know, Sean couldn't make it, so we took a cardboard head version of him.
It was flat Sean.
Flat Sean, yeah.
Yeah. So I think we've covered enough of that. I want to jump into the show and introduce our guest. It is Pietro DiCaprio, which I'm sure I will butcher his name to some degree. He's in Italy now, but they met at Scale in Los Angeles. His little bio, he's interested in IT and software development. He says since youth, he's only 28, so as far as I'm concerned, he's still young. He's a full-time software developer in the fields of product safety and pharmaceutical serialization and tracking, which chain of custody kind of stuff. I used to have something to do with that in an earlier life. Passionate on FOSS, Linux advocate and a Linux server user since more than 10 years ago. Founder of Fabricators. It's a company that wants to have a positive impact on people's lives, one software at a time, he says, especially Vanilla OS, which is the focus of our show today. Welcome, Pietro.
Hey.
Hey. Wait, so you're in Turin? Where are you located?
I live here. I'm in Brescia. It's 1 hour east from Milan. Mm-hmm. And I'm Italian. I live in Italy. And indeed, I was in Pasadena for the Scale, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, where I met Catherine, that I thanks very much for taking me here with you today.
So how far are you from Verona? I was almost killed there driving the wrong way many years ago.
Like 40 minutes, 45 minutes, something depending where you want to go, of course, but something around 45 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Vanilla OS and how they got us here. Then I'll let my co-host jump all over you.
Well, Vanilla OS is a Linux distribution, basically. Particular thing is that it's an immutable distribution. Currently, in its first version released the end of this December, so 3 months ago. Today is 29, so it's, yeah, was 29th of December. Today is 29th March. It's 3 months, basically. Based on Ubuntu with a custom immutability solution. There are a few things going on. We are already changing a lot for version 2.0, planned for somewhere in the next months. We are switching to a Debian as a base, so we are completely dropping Ubuntu. And there are a few reasons behind that. Consider that even today in its 1. Everything version, we have Ubuntu as a base, but there is nothing from Ubuntu. We remove every customization that Canonical made to GNOME. We remove every particular thing that is really Ubuntu. So any customization, any extension, any changes that Canonical makes to make Ubuntu, it's removed. We are using it as a base only for compatibility, reliability on everyday systems that users have in their home. In few words, it's a Linux distribution. Then there are a few extra stuff behind it that we are going to find out during this talk.
So I'm pretty excited about this because Doc and Sean and I were just talking to a mutual, very smart friend, and he made the comment that these types of Linux distributions, immutable distributions, are the future of Linux. And I thought, well, that's interesting. If somebody like that says something like that, I pay attention. And I wanted to hear from you. You know, what do you think about that? Why? I'm curious really about your backstory. Like, what made you create the distribution in the first place? What problems were you trying to solve? Were you primarily focused on security, something else?
I'm happy someone made a comment like that. This makes me really happy. I hope to make it a truth. I mean, I don't hide from you that this is what we have in mind. Me and Mirko. Mirko is the main founder of VanillaOS. And indeed, VanillaOS is not from myself. VanillaOS is from Mirko. With Luca, that is the creator of DistroBox, that is a core part of VanillaOS. The story behind this is that Mirko is a huge fan of Fedora Silverblue. It's an old user of Chromebooks. So as a user of such kind of systems, of such kind of distributions, he always had issues with all of them for different reasons. One time was for the immutability, one time was for availability of packages, one time was for compatibility with the systems, even just talking about drivers. So as developers, as people that love to be on Linux daily and work with it, basically, there was a common opinion about a common user. If you take a random user and you want to give that user a solution, you don't have a standard one. You don't have something that really, really cares about the user experience, about not needing to know really anything about Linux and everything that is not Windows or Macintosh. So with the user experience in mind, VanillaOS wants to provide a system that is easy to use, provides security, reliability, and compatibility basically to every kind of user. That is a newbie that runs Linux for the first time, or is a developer or an expert that needs more powerful options or, tools, systems that allow them to work in different manners without switching. So Vanilla really wants to help as much as possible in the simplest way possible every daily users. And yes, I hope this kind of distribution is the future of Linux, of course.
So I have a question that may make me look foolish, but I'd rather look foolish than somebody else just not know. What is an immutable OS? I don't know what that means as far as a Linux distribution goes.
Well, the theory is that when a system is immutable, you cannot break it. This means that in theory, you should say
that sounds like a challenge because
give it to me a few minutes.
Yeah, the point is, if you really want to do something, you are going to find a way to do that thing. So if you really want to break a system, you are going to find a way to break that system. But when a system is immutable, should make this task really hard. So the system, keeping it in a very high level, the system should always be able to boot. How can you make the system to always boot? Creating security safety mechanisms. One of them is the immutability. The immutability makes the root partition, the system partition, read-only. So a random user cannot just run commands in the terminal, write files, delete files, modify the state of the system, and that's it. The users don't have direct access to the system data. So this is what makes a system immutable. Then there are different ways to reach immutability, of course. The most known one is OS3 that is used in Fedora Silverblue, or BTRFS, I always forget the correct order of the letters, that is an entire file system that brings overlays and a lot of stuff that makes, I don't want to say easy because it's not easy, but allows you to create states of the system, so you can go forward and back between states. But indeed, you cannot write directly in the root partition on the system. And after an analysis and tests, we decided to create what we called AB root. So, stop me when you want, because otherwise I just go on adding information and stuff. I don't want to create a confusion or whatever, because
I think we all have a lot of questions based on what's happening in the back channel. I think the way you're presenting it sounds like you are thinking in terms of desktop users. End users having an easy environment on the desktop. But I wonder if you could speak a little bit about the benefits to developers, or the benefits for, you know, including vanilla in your container image, and the benefits for having a consistent base OS, something like that.
Well, we have to split two topics. One is the benefit, indeed, of having a stable system, something that as a developer you can rely on. I every day run different softwares, both written by me, that are probably the most dangerous ones, and from third parties that are tools I use to develop. So since I develop as my job, it is my job to develop, I need to be sure that if this evening I turn off my PC and tomorrow I turn it on again, it works. If I install something that I need to develop, to test, or even just to play with it, I must be sure to have an easy recovery point. How can I do that? There are multiple ways. There are also the Windows snapshots, I don't remember what they call it, that sometimes are automatically created. You can trigger them manually, but you must be not a power user, but you must really know what you're doing and what you need to do to have this kind of thing. And the recovery point of Windows doesn't work in a let's say, complete way recovering the previous state. It registers how it is the system right now, creates a recovery point. It's not a snapshot. I believe they call it recovery point. And then you can go back to that point in time. So as a developer, it happened to me many times that I needed to reinstall the operating system because strange things were going on. Apps were not opening. If we talk about Windows 10 and 11, the start menu was not showing up after an update that the system installed automatically without even advising me. So, and this is valid for both common end users, desktop users, and indeed more power users or developer. You need to rely on what you're working on. And from a developer point of view, there is also another thing in vanilla that is Apex. Apex provides subsystems that allow you to install on a single installation. So you have vanilla OS, currently based on Ubuntu, but let's say Debian, since the next release is going to be Debian. You have Debian installed. But through Apex, that is our utility, you can install packages from AUR, from DNF, and other distributions that we are adding time by time. So as a developer that releases on Linux environment and publishes on different package managers, you don't need multiple installations. You can rely on the subsystems that are present in vanilla OS.
That's actually really fascinating, and it does make me wonder how does X Windows fit into this? I mean, I like the idea of like compartmentalizing different, you know, applications or subsystems so that it doesn't make the system unusable. For example, I am also running Debian right now, and last week I rebooted my system and discovered that there were some weird updates that happened to my NVIDIA drivers. And all of a sudden, I couldn't use my system. So I'm curious, how does X Windows, whether Wayland or X11 or whatever the terminology is that treated separately from like these other compartmentalized, don't break each other apps? Because it seems like, especially at the desktop, that's a layer that everything has to communicate with.
Well, yeah, it is the graphics server, whatever you use. Our default is Wayland, but you can switch to X11. It's installed on the root system. It's installed on our file system, on our Debian. When you install on the subsystems, those are containers that are run through DistroBox. Luca, the creator of DistroBox, is one of the founders of Vanilla OS. So there has been a development, and from this development, Apex was born to have those containers running in the background, still having direct access to the apps, whatever they are, installed on those containers directly in the host system. So they see each other. The host system is exposed, the home partition is exposed to the container. So you may install whatever you want. I do a step back. In Vanilla OS, you don't have access to the sudo command or the apt command. If you try them, they are command not found. You cannot install directly from apt. You have to use apex. The syntax is apx install whatever package you want, press enter, and this is installed in the default container that, since it's Debian-based, the default container is going to be Debian-based. If you add the flag dash dash AUR, this is going to be installed in the Arch container because you explicitly said, I want it from AUR. At the end of every installation, you have the question, do you want a desktop entry for this? You answer yes, and you go, we have GNOME actually, you go in the activity view and you have your app here. There are people that tried to install the same app, was Firefox probably, in multiple containers, create all the desktop entries, start the same app from different systems in the same system in the same time. So they had like Firefox from Ubuntu, Firefox from Arch, and Firefox from Fedora there working and being able to do a comparison between the same app running of different systems, but staying on the same one. So you are really free to work how you prefer. You don't really need to change your usual way to work. You don't really need to learn new stuff. Also because we discourage users from installing stuff from the terminal. We discourage users from copy-pasting commands from Google. We are lover of Flatpak. GNOME software is patched to show you Flatpak as default option. Anyway, there is when you install Vanilla OS, and the first time you start up Vanilla OS after installation, there is what we call the first setup. The first setup helps users to make choices. One of them is, do you want Flatpak support? That is by default flagged as yes. And as an end user, you don't need to really know what is Flatpak, how to install it, what to do. Basically, in this first setup, you can also do just next, 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 leave our default options, and you are basically ready to go. You open GNOME software, you already have Flatpaks there, and you install whatever you prefer without really knowing that is coming from Flatpak. And other options you have in the first setup is for NVIDIA proprietary drivers that are a benefit for most users. Of course, checking if you have an NVIDIA card. If we see an NVIDIA card in your system, we prompt you for proprietary drivers. You can still enable support to app images and just go next. Everything is handled in the background. As an end user, you don't need to know in advance what you need to do in the system.
Okay, this is the questions are piling up in the back channels. But first, I have to let everybody know that this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Collide. That's Collide with a K. Collide is a device trust solution that ensures unsecured devices can't access your apps. Collide is a big news. If you're an Okta user, Collide can get your entire fleet to 100% compliance. Collide patches one of the major holes in zero trust architecture, device compliance. Think about it. Your identity provider only lets known devices log into apps, but just because a device is known doesn't mean it's in a secure state. In fact, plenty of the devices in your fleet probably shouldn't be trusted. Maybe they're running on out-of-date OS versions, or maybe they've got unencrypted credentials lying around. If a device isn't compliant or isn't running the Collide agent, it can't access the organization's SaaS apps or other resources. The device user can't log into your company's cloud apps until they fix the problem on their end. It's that simple. For example, a device will be blocked if an employee doesn't have an up-to-date browser. Using end-user remediation helps drive your fleet to 100% compliance without overwhelming your IT team. Without Collide, IT teams have no way to solve these compliance issues or to stop insecure devices from logging in. With Collide, you can set and enforce compliance across your entire fleet, Mac, Windows, and Linux. Collide is unique in that it makes device compliance part of the authentication process. When a user logs in with Okta, Collide alerts them to compliance issues and prevents unsecured devices from logging in. It's security you can feel good about because Collide puts transparency and respect for users at the center of their product. To sum it up, Collide's method means fewer support tickets, less frustration, and most importantly, 100% fleet compliance. Visit collide.com/floss to learn more or book a demo. That's KOLIDE.com/floss. Okay, Pietro, we have actually a couple of questions together. And then because more have been said here, have scrolled off. Okay, one is, so this is kind of positioning stuff. There are a zillion distributions already out there, and I think it's amazing to me that more keep coming along. And you've got one of them. And so one question is, is it a replacement for CoreOS? And sort of related is somebody in the back channel says, we have this already with Linux Mint for noobs and Arch Linux for power users. So there's some niche you're trying to fit into that's none of those. So tell me how when you're selling it to somebody who says, I'm already looking at Mint or Arch or whatever, or CoreOS, whatever the others are.
I've already heard that question. It's a bit hard to provide a final answer, because indeed Vanilla OS can be the solution for multiple purposes. There are also been at scale users that explain me their need, their daily usage, and I was the first one to tell them Vanilla OS is not for you. Because it was a so high level usage, in meaning as expertise. So those users are actually doing operations directly on the kernel and stuff like that. And I was the first one to tell them, don't use Vanilla OS. You don't have the freedom to reach that low level in the system as you have in other distributions and whatever you prefer. Is a replacement for CoreOS? I don't know. Depends what you do. Is a replacement for Arch as a power user? What you're doing exactly? I may just tell you yes to sell you vanilla, but the truth is what you're doing daily, what you need to do, because if it can be the solution for most of the users, whatever is the distribution they come from, it for sure is not a proper distribution for a certain type of users. So,
I have a somewhat related question, because again, these are conceptually very different from, let's call them, the usual type distro. So immutable, this concept is fairly new. It's still very new to me, the immutable distros and the benefits and whatnot. I wondered if, can you tell me, and for everybody else out there who probably finds this new, how do you address vulnerabilities and bugs that's different from the usual way of doing that?
I introduce you one of the updates of Vanilla OS 2.0. Right now we have so little step back, we have AB root is a two partition system. You have two physical partitions on the disk where two exact copies of the system are living. One partition is the one you booted in and is the system you're running read only. The other partition is your past or your future, depending on what you're doing, is your past until you need to apply changes on the system, is your future in the moment you apply changes to the system. For example, you install a driver update. The driver update is not installed on your current partition, that is read-only, but is installed on the future partition, that is the one that you are not using in this moment. The installation is performed in an atomic way. So there is a transaction, an overlay is created, everything is executed. If all the commands exit with code zero, then the transaction is success. The changes are written on disk on the future partition. And whenever you are ready to reboot, you are going to boot in the future partition because grab entries have been updated. This is the core concept, but indeed are two exact copies of the installation. With 2.0, we almost succeeded to switch to OCI. So the update you are receiving for your system to update drivers, to fix bugs, to address vulnerabilities, and so on, are, let's say, containers that are extracted to your root partition. I'm simplifying as much as possible. I don't want to go too much in detail, but this is basically what's happening. So whatever there is the need, this is another change between following Ubuntu's release and switching to Debian Seed, to be precise. We are going to release whenever we believe it's required to release. And with this OCI system, we are providing you, indeed from Docker Hub or our hub we are going to run, I don't know yet, an update of the image of the system. And you are going to receive it and installed in the ABRoot style. So there is a transaction. If everything goes successfully, is written on disk. When you, user, are ready to reboot, at next reboot, you will find your system updated. For any reason you are not happy with the update, you just simply reboot and select the previous partition. So you are back before the changes that you don't like. You may not like them because something changed, because some problem rises up, even if the installation was successful. It can be whatever reason you have. You simply reboot back to the previous state. And you may force another update or install other stuff. This is going to be handled replacing the content of the partition having the installation you don't like anymore, let's say like that. And about updates, I'm picking what Sean said earlier about powering on the system and finding changes that he didn't like. This is where VSO, the vanilla system operator, enters the game. We changed how we update the system. Most of the systems use PageKit. PageKit, it's using Debian, Ubuntu, and many other distributions. This is checking for updates. It's downloading updates. It's pre-installing updates. Then when you reboot, you are going to reinstall those updates, and you are then going to reboot again. Then, depending on what has been installed, you reboot one time, two times, or you don't have to reboot. It's really a little mess. So VSO, what does is checks weekly or monthly. You can select it in the options. If there are updates. If there are updates, then it checks. Is the computer in a condition where I can download and install the updates? How is this check done? What's the network status? What's the CPU load? What's the RAM load? What's the user, the average user? I'm on a laptop. Okay. I'm on battery. I'm on a power cable. What's the condition? Can I download the updates right now and install them right now? Yes, I'm in the condition. So the updates are downloaded, are installed in the background with the ABRoot transaction in the future partition. The next time you reboot, because you wanted to reboot, you have the already updated system. You don't need any more reboots. You don't need to wait on doing stuff because there is a process running in the background that is making your PC slower or whatever. We take care of all the process for you. And we want that you reboot only once, the next time you want.
That sounds massively appealing. So I have another question from kind of the back channel. So there are a few, a handful, let's say, of immutable distros available right now. What do you see happening in the future, let's say 5 years down the road? Do you think there will be a lot more of these types of distros? Or do you see maybe convergence into a couple of base images plus some customizations? Do you see you working together, or do you see this just kind of blowing up into a whole new ecosystem?
Hard to say. For sure, what is clear right now is that there are many distributions out there that are migrating to immutability and immutability-like systems. There are already distributions that cloned our repositories, removed the credits, and published a new distribution. So I don't know. Things are moving on. People is day by day more interested in this immutability thing, whatever it is. It's interested in having a more reliable distribution, whatever is the method. And today the method looks to be immutability. Tomorrow, I don't know. What I know is that we, as Vanilla OS, release everything open source on our GitHub organization. On our GitHub organization, there is only one private repository that is an old repository of internal notes, internal meetings, whatever. So everything is it's open. ABroot, it's open. VSO, it's open. Apex, it's open. All the customization made in DistroBox to work in this way are open. We encourage other developers to join the project if they want, if they believe in what we believe, or make their own version, even using our stuff. We are happy if the community, and I don't mean only our community, but the Linux community, moves on user experience and providing reliable solutions to end users. And I don't hide that we also see a future for Vanilla OS in the server environment, because with the changes we are performing, we are going to release also a desktop-less version that can provide you immutability on servers. So who knows?
Wow. So we have more questions backed up here. I know Sean is chomping at the bit for one of them. But first, I have to let everybody know that joining Club Twit is another great way to support our network here. As a member, you'll get access to ad-free versions of all the shows on Twit, as well as other great benefits. There's a bonus Twit Plus feed, which includes footage and discussions that didn't make the final show edit, as well as bonus shows we started, such as Hands on Mac, Hands on Windows, Ask Me Anything, since Fireside Chats with some of your favorite Twit guests and co-hosts. As Floss Weekly listeners, you might be interested in checking out, you should be interested in checking out another Club Twit exclusive show, the Untitled Linux Show, hosted by Jonathan Bennett. So sign up and join Club Twit for just $7 a month. Head over to twit.tv/clubtwit and join today. We thank you for your support. So Sean.
Yes. So I have to admit, I thought, it's going to be a show about, you know, one more distribution, but this is kind of a drastic departure from a traditional, like, this is another distribution based on Ubuntu or whatever. I mean, the amount of things that are integrated, like being able to compartmentalize or containerize or whatever you want to call it, things from various distributions, even ones that aren't, you know, directly Debian based or Ubuntu based, fascinating. So I'm curious, what are some of the frustrations that a Linux user who wants to try, you know, vanilla out, what would some of the frustrations be? I mean, you mentioned, you know, the potential to have to reboot a bunch of things, but that's not for everything. You know, it's not everything you do. Oh, I need to reboot three times. But what are some of the frustrations or the issues that you hope to be able to make a little smoother for people, yourself especially? I mean, you know, this is something you use. So what are some of your pain points?
Well, one big example, we have to split this question for my mom, for example, that needs nothing. And my community members that are more power users and need something more. What if I want updated packages, Arch style, but I still want to be sure I don't break my system? What if I want an app from a store, a package manager, that the developer chosen or didn't want, whatever, to do not publish on a different package manager? So it's difficult to say one specific thing, like it's difficult to say many things. In my scenario is I have the containers with different development environments, and I can access the single environment. For other users, could be being able to find on directly on GNOME software or simply the software center, whatever is the desktop you use, and search for programs and know that they work, that they will continue to work, and especially that they are updated. Because then the problem of selecting a specific package manager is how often the packages, whatever they are updated by the maintainers. How many packages are published only on one, let's say, one repository type, one store, then one manager, by the creator that then relies on community maintainers to keep the other channels updated.
And that's already a frustration with an Ubuntu user, right? You have the app repositories and the Snap store, whatever the Snap thing is called. And in general, I tend to, because I'm old, I tend to install things from the app repository. But often I have to like look and say, okay, well, which one has been updated more recently, which has, you know, the more recent stuff. Does that kind of multiply when you're looking at, I mean, if you can install a package from, you know, the Arch repositories or from Fedora or from, you know, Debian's app repositories or Flatpak, I assume, or, I mean, oh my goodness. You said that you can enable and disable things, but what if somebody has all of them enabled? Do they just have to pick and like, oh, well, you know, for this package, I'm using Flatpak, for that package, I'm using, you know, Arch and all that stuff. This is a cheesy metaphor, but is the juice worth the squeeze? I mean, all of the, you know, maintaining all of those various ways, is it worth it, or is it, or would you rather just see like, we only support doing this because otherwise it's just, you know, more work for ourselves for very little benefit?
Well, if you are wondering yourself where you should take the package, means you are not a newbie. You Fair. Already know what you're talking about. So the newbie opens the software center, searches programs that are proposed as Flatpak, because during the first setup, just press next, next, next without knowing nothing. And this is the way, period. Then you learn something more, you find out the subsystems, or you come from a different distribution and you look, oh, how can I do DNF install, blah, 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 on this system, Ubuntu, Vanilla, Debian, whatever. You can't use DNF, you must use APT or whatever. So you are already learning more and more, and one day you will know how to select. But in the meantime, you just install from the software center or via APT that is replaced via APX, because you are not going to use APT, you're not going to use DNF, you're going to do APT install whatever. And this is going to be installed like APT until you declare the flags for DNF, for AUR, for void Linux subsystem, and so on. You can also use Nix scripts if you want, but then you are on another level. You're not anymore a common user. From our side, to keep all those channels available, it's not much effort along the run. So once we added the support, it's there and it's difficult. It is going to be changed or need a lot of maintenance, because it's a matter of supporting a different subsystem, basically. And once it's there, it's managed by DistroBox. So as I was saying previously, if you're a newbie, you install next, and you are fine. You are free to go. If you are shown and you know the difference between the package managers, the difference between this is most updated, this is most outdated, this is unstable, because how many times on Arch you install stuff that is released without testing, for example. So when you know this kind of stuff, you already know where to take things.
Okay. So, go ahead, Sean.
Oh, sorry.
No, that was fine.
Oh, I can ask my... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was thinking through it. And I guess what you're saying is once the wrapper, for lack of a better term, around the various package managers, since everything is installed in its own containerized environment, I guess as long as the tools are in place, yeah, it's not like this, you're not maintaining three versions of a package. You're just maintaining the method for containerizing that sort of thing. And that's already done
Correct.
With DistroBox. I might have Correct. Forgotten which tools, but okay. So, okay. So I guess that makes sense. And there are, yeah, there's reasons like, you know, the Debian based apt repository of OBS, for example, doesn't include browser source. So you'd never want to use that one, but you said the default is Flatpak. Is that true? Did I mishear that or did I imagine?
Yes,
that?
Correct. Correct. Okay. But you are not going to install Flatpak using Apex. You are going to install them. Or you do Flatpak install, but open the software center and install from there. You start using the terminal when you really want to use the terminal. We want users to avoid the need to open the terminal.
Oh, I'm offended at the core. No, just kidding.
I can understand. Many old users, and I mean not old of age, but old also just 1 year old, 2 year olds. When you tell them, "Oh, in vanilla you don't need the terminal," they are like, "What? I want to install this stuff. I want to install this. I want to do this. I want to do that." Vanilla S wants to improve and smooth your experience. We have utilities with VSO. You can also, how many of you know Automator from Apple?
I know of it. I haven't used it.
I understand it's actually good, but I've not used it yet.
Okay. You can automate stuff based on triggers and stuff like that. In vanilla, you can do the same. For example, you can, currently only by command line against what I just said, but because we are still working on it and it's not officially ready to use, but it's shipping into the system. For the braves who want to test it, you can, for example, say, okay, when I connect this specific mouse that is blocked by the cable, that is a gaming mouse, open Steam in big view mode, and I want to use it in this way, a mouse or a controller or whatever. So you can connect a specific device to a specific action that is executed automatically for you. You can say stuff, okay, when I open Visual Studio Code and I just go in start activity, whatever it's your favorite way, write Visual Studio, enter, and open Visual Studio Code from the menu, automatically run a debug server, language server, a web server, whatever, because you need it to develop. You open Visual Studio Code only when you develop, so you want that those stuff are started automatically when you open Visual Studio Code. You have multiple things going on that system. But again, you don't have to need to use the terminal. We try to provide you with utilities that are easy to use and try to solve as much needs as possible to every kind of users.
It's almost ironic because behind the scenes, you're doing some amazingly complex operating system magic, right? I mean, you know, the idea of all of these objects being containerized and separate and, you know, two root partitions, one active, one future for the ability to roll back or whatever. I mean, those are all extremely high level, low level, I don't know what you want to call it, just complicated aspects of an operating system. And yet at the same time, the goal is so that people don't have to think about it, probably ultimately, so they don't have to fix it because it won't break as easy, which probably goes all the way back to the whole immutable idea. So it's fascinating to me that something so complicated under the hood is designed so that you don't ever need to lift the hood.
Well, this is exactly the idea. So the vanilla name is not only because Mirko, indeed the real mind behind all this stuff, loves vanilla. it's entirely, it's the concept, it's the idea. We are both members of the GNOME Foundation, and you have a vanilla installation of GNOME in Manila OS. So it's the name, it's the idea, it's the concept and the experience you find in it. It's a smooth experience that should make you to feel comfortable with whatever you're doing. Simple and complex stuff.
So we have a question from our back channel that I think is actually a really good one, and a lot of us can identify. But how can using an immutable distro help with maintaining system entropy, keeping things organized, clean, if you will? This person who asks says they often reinstall their OS every year because their computer gets disorganized with old packages and files. Can vanilla OS help end that cycle of reinstallation?
Okay. This is a problem. Allow me to call it a problem that OS 3 brings in. So over time, you have those overlays that are OS 3 is a Git-like. So you have commits and you have layers. So over time, you have many of them. As a user, you can choose to drop the oldest. You can choose to merge together multiple layers. You can do things. But as a user, whatever you are, a newbie, a developer, or an expert, is not something that happens automatically. In Vanilla OS, thanks to both the idea behind AB root and the concept of keeping things simple, you have only two states. And this may be a plus or maybe a minus depending on what you do of indeed having only two states. But having only those two states, you have only two copies of your root partition, and that's it. You don't keep the old stuff, dirty stuff, however you want to call it, over time. You have one state more than what you're using. So in 1 year from today, you are still going to have the current state and the past or future state, depending on what you're doing.
So I'm wondering, as we're getting down toward the end of the show, we're not quite there. What are there any verticals this appeals to? It seems to me, like I would look at the back channel, so people say, well, I love the command line interface. I want to live in a terminal all the time. And you're trying to keep people off the terminal. Because you have a kind of very broad niche here. It seems to me you've got kind of a B2B sell for a lot of companies that don't want to have to manage their users a lot, but don't want to be using Windows or Mac, are probably using Chromebooks if they're using Linux at all. Or Fedora Silverblue or something you mentioned ahead of time in an email. So I'm wondering if you're seeing uptake. Actually, I'd be interested about uptake in general. Like who among outside of your immediate circle is chomping onto this and wanting it? And what surprises might be in there as well?
Well, right now, I don't know. Or at least we don't have companies right now that say, hey, we are using Vanilla OS because it solves us this stuff. We hope it can be a solution for the scenario you mentioned about not having Windows machines, providing users a different system that may be Linux instead of a Chromebook, but still being able of easily manage them and provide a safe environment for the user. So from the security point of view, vanilla can be a lot, can avoid installation of broken stuff, can avoid the installation of not authorized packages, if you want to say about corporate environment, can really help on that kind of management. It's really new. It's only 3 months old. We don't have much use cases to provide you. I would like to have. If there is any company out there that wants to be a pirate and test it right now, please raise your hand. We are happy to help you. But outside of our community, I hope everyone can be a use case, really everyone. Of course, it's impossible. It's really impossible. Our main focus right now is on common users that are not needing a lot of technical stuff, a lot of geek knowledge. So while vanilla is good for developers, we want to bring it to daily users that just go on internet and browse Facebook, Twitter, whatever, and sometimes play games. Our goal is to make those users feel comfortable. And if we reach that goal, we are really, really, really happy.
So I think we're running out of time, but to wrap, I wondered if you could quickly tell us, what's a vanilla key? Can you tease that a little bit?
Vanilla key, it's something that it's we are working on. Well, we're working on the idea right now. The idea is that wherever you go, you have a USB key that is the vanilla key with you. You go to a random PC, boot the vanilla key, and this is your vanilla permanent installation. So it's a live key that doesn't work as a simple live key, but it's your current installation with your immutability stuff, with your home partition and whatever. So you may have documents there and edit them, save. When you connect to a PC, you can extend your, let's say can extend your home partition, but in true, you should be able to link a share folder to the hard drive you have available. So you partition that hard drive to reserve a bit of space or the entire drive for your vanilla installation, and vanilla records the fingerprint of that hard drive to connect, to link automatically to the share folder. You turn off the PC, you go home, you connect to the key to your PC. Oh, I know this drive, I already registered it. Let's link it. And you have your games, for example. So you have a single installation available everywhere for multiple scopes, having on the physical PC only the home partition. There are a few things to work on. There is the cryptography of the data, the possibility to lose the key and so the private key to unlock the data on the drives. There is the possibility that the drive has been formatted. There are a lot of things to resolve. We are working on the idea. We are looking for helps also just in thinking out the logics that are behind the vanilla key. But this is something we want to create and to provide to everyone.
Very cool.
Well, we have run out of time, or close to run out of time. This has been a terrific show. You've got something that I haven't seen as much activity in both our front channel among ourselves and the back channel as well. You've got an exciting thing going on there. So our final, just a quick one. If you can answer briefly, is there anything we haven't asked that you would like us to have asked that we might be on the list?
Well, I believe we touched almost every topic. Almost is also the previous tool before AB Root, so we may bring this out. But we spoke really about more than the most important topics. There is more going on. There are more stuff we have and we usually talk about. It's everything on our website and on our Discord community. So if you go on vanillaos.org, you have blog posts, documents, links, whatever. At any time you have questions, we are ready to answer, both to our audience and to you three, that I thanks again. But right now, I don't have anything else that is quick to share to everybody. So thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah, lots of topics. Really,
so thanks, so, Catherine. That was really a random thing that we met and prepared this thing. So yeah,
she went fishing and brought in a penguin, as it were. So
yes, always.
Final two questions. What are your favorite text editor and scripting language?
The community is going to eat me, not only hate me, to eat me, because I'm a C# developer using JetBrains Rider. So I'm the evil. I'm the evil.
You're the alien.
Okay, I used to use PHP Storm
for
itself.
Vim and Bash. That was the no.
I'm the evil in this thing, right? Well, I use multiple languages. My daily language is indeed C# with the .NET Core, so targeting basically everything that powers on. But I use C#, Python, Go, sometimes PHP. Well, my favorite still is C# because it is what I've learned first, basically, at a professional level, at least. I started with PHP, but C# is what has been taught to me at a professional level and is what is providing me the salary every month. So, sometimes, yes.
Well, we've had Miguel de Casa on here, one of the fathers of GNOME. He's got into Microsoft in part because of his use of tools coming from their side and .NET and all the rest of it. So it all blurs together. And because you're early enough, you've just been at this for 3 months. Is that right? Did I hear that right?
Yes. Yeah, correct. So, 29th of December was the release.
That's already 3 months ago. We are going to have you back. We say that to pretty much everybody, but you've got something that's so new and hot. I think that this immutable idea, especially since Kyle Rankin came in, he runs Purism. He's the CEO of Purism. So he's not a lightweight at all, as well as an old colleague of ours. So thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Really appreciate that.
So guys, we had a lot of back and forth going
over.
Yeah,
that was great. Yeah.
What we might want to ask.
Yeah, I'm curious. Yeah, I'm curious to hear more about the automation stuff, to be honest. So, you know, if we have him back, I'm curious what exactly he was talking about. If that was an existing system, if that was something specific to vanilla. Yeah, that was fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Automator. I've been told by people who are deep in the Mac world that's one of the best programs that Apple has and nobody knows about it. It's just called Automator. And it's scripting, you know, it used to be AppleScript, I guess. Maybe they just rebranded that. But a way to deal with repetitive tasks. And I guess that's their way of helping people that don't want to go down into the command line, or they don't want you to go down into the command line.
And it can be triggered, you know, by events. I think that's the big issue with the Automator, is it's event triggered. So you can, you know, have something happen based on something else happening. So,
I think I'm going to install it and try it out before we talk to him again. So.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Well, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Give it a test run. Kick the tires.
I should use it on the new Linux box I don't have yet. So, getting boxes coming into here. So we have both of you. This is actually Catherine's co-show this time around.
But if Sean's online, you got to pull him in.
I'll let you plug first, Catherine.
Sure. Let's see. What do I have to plug? I think we have the other. Oh, well, yes. Earlier this year, I launched a podcast. Oh, this is on the screen. We have Reality 2.0, which Doc and I do. when we're not doing this show and we talk about different stuff. I hope you'll join us for that. I also launched another podcast, Open at Intel. I hope you'll check that out. We talk about a lot of open sourcey things lately. It has been security, open source security. So yeah, check it out, please. And you can find me on Mastodon and Twitter. And if you have any questions or feedback.
And Sean.
Same as always for me. I'm doing all the things. YouTube, I guess, is the place I'd like to be spending more time. But
SeanPowers, and you get a zillion things on YouTube.
Pick your poison. What do you want to see me do? I'll dance for you.
I actually ran into in Chicago somebody who's my wife has a vast coterie of Irish relatives in Chicago, and one of them, or a relative there, was from your town, Petoskey, and I looked you up on a phone, or had them look up on the phone, and there was like so much stuff.
I'm a little bit worried.
It's all good stuff. So thanks a lot for being on here. Next week, this is great. And thanks to Jonathan too in the back channel, who didn't get in the front channel here because you jumped in ahead of him, and we room for four. That's it. So, next week we have the return of Paula Hunter of Mojo Loop. Much has been happening in Mojo Loop since we had her on before, and she was a great guest. So that is coming up next week. And until then, I'm Doc Searles. This is Floss Weekly, and we'll see you then.
Hey, I know you're super busy, so I won't keep you long, but I wanted to tell you about a show here on the TWiT network called Tech News Weekly. You are a busy person, and during your week, you may want to learn about all the tech news that's fit to, well, say, not print, here on TWiT. It's Tech News Weekly. Me, Micah Sargent, my co-host, Jason Howell. We talk to and about the people making and breaking the tech news, and we love the opportunity to get to share those stories with you and let the people who wrote them or broke them share them as well. So I hope you check it out every Thursday right here on TWiT.